And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
Shane, I know it's been over 24 hours since that Alabama-Tennessee ass-whooping, but I think Tua just scored another touchdown.
Yeah, you're probably right, brother. Dude, you want to add insult to injury? I finally like a 24-hour cool down, Mike. You know, like, I don't want to talk about the game. I don't want to see, you know, total opposite if we win. If we win, I'm going to get on social media. I'm going to bother. I'm going to troll people. That's what I do. But I just want to, like, get away from it. And so we're going up to Pigeon Forge this morning. And guess who I run into?
Nick Saban.
The Million Dollar Band. I'm up there, we're gonna go sightseeing and stuff, and the traffic stopped. I'm like, what's going on? What are all these buses? And then all of a sudden it comes by and I was like, oh, they just keep winning, Mike. They don't even have to stop for red lights.
Well, the good news, Shane, outside of the SEC, obviously we'll jump into that action in just a moment here, but I had to throw this out there on Saturday night. This was one of my most viral tweets here recently, but I just want everyone to know, whether your school won, lost, or is on a bye this weekend, we all won because Ohio State lost by 30 to a 3-3 Purdue team.
Hell yeah. You want to talk about cheering me up, Mike? I was up watching that one. I was like, at first I was like, oh man, there's no way they're going to get back in this. And they get in the red zone, and I turn it off. And then I turned it back, and there's no points. And I'm like, what happened? And you know what? It doesn't matter because Ohio State's going down, brother.
Well, let's just hope Urban Meyer remembers this ass-whooping in the morning.
Hey, you made the deal with the devil. You sleep with it now.
Okay, obviously, let's jump into the SEC action. And I think the biggest game, you know, every game was kind of a dud this weekend in the SEC, if you ask me. But, you know, the one that I was kind of most intrigued by, Mississippi State at LSU. Tigers come away with a 19-3 win. What were your thoughts, immediate thoughts on this one, Shane?
You know, I really thought Mississippi State had a chance in this one. Their defense was playing outstanding. But then, as the game goes on, it kept saying, well, Fitz is horrible. You know, I just kept thinking to myself, this is the worst performance. If they had any, like, the smallest amount of offense on that team, dude, this team may be unstoppable. But, I mean, the defense just couldn't keep them in it.
Yeah, I mean, you mean the offense. So Nick Fitzgerald was just awful. He was 8 of 24 for 59 yards passing.
Golly.
4 interceptions. And, you know, making things that much worse, Grant Delpit, LSU's outstanding safety. He's probably going to be an All-American. He had as many receptions from Nick Fitzgerald in this game as anyone on Mississippi State's roster. I mean, that pretty much says it all.
That's freaking crazy. I'm telling you, it was – I mean, there were still moments where this was a ball game. And they had a chance to get back into it, and Mississippi State's defense would get them there, gift wrap it, and then they would just nothing with it. It was just nonstop. I mean, they only got 3 points, Mike. How many points have they scored in the last few weeks?
They scored 23 against Auburn. That was kind of their breakout. But prior to that, they scored 6 against Florida, 7 against Kentucky. And, of course, they lost both those games. So here's an interesting stat for you, Shane. Mississippi State ranked 129th in the nation in scoring against conference opponents, so dead last, Mississippi State. And this is after, obviously, hiring Joe Moorhead, who's known for his offensive
the guru.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he shoulders a lot of blame here, but at the same time, I don't know if how much we can put on him, how much it's on Nick Fitzgerald not being able to complete passes. And I mean, there's not a damn receiver or tight end in this offense that seems to be of SEC caliber.
No, there isn't.
Obviously, I expected it to be a lot closer. I picked LSU to win, but I thought Mississippi State would cover. And a lot of that for me came from the fact that LSU was coming off, you know, back-to-back games against Florida and Georgia. Those are two tough games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we saw a little bit in that from this game, just from the fact that for as bad as Nick Fitzgerald and that Mississippi State offense was, that defense was outstanding. They held LSU to 110 yards rushing. They held them to 7 of 18 on third downs. Joe Burrow, after this game, said it was the worst damn game of his life. He said he had not experienced a game like this since middle school. So,
yeah,
the Mississippi State defense came to play, but you know, had their offense showed up and put a couple points on the board. Hell, I mean, they, like I said, they had four turnovers. They only resulted in 7 points there, but constantly put the team in bad position. If they just don't turn the ball over, they may have won this game.
Oh, without a doubt, man. I mean, that you saw you cancel that first score out. If you take that first score out, this thing is tied up 3-3 at half. I mean, the defense did everything right. And how mad would you be in that locker room? If I gave my all for my team, and then you go to the sideline just to watch your guys go three and out or you know, turn over the ball, I mean, that locker room, man, may get divided because them defensive players may start taking this the bad way.
Let's jump to Coach O here. Just obviously LSU lost to Mississippi State last year 37-7. That 30-point margin, that was the biggest margin in this series. And keep in mind, this series goes back longer than Tennessee-Alabama. These teams have met 114 years in a row, so they just coming off their worst loss ever.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Coach O on just the night and day difference from his squad last year to this year.
Night and day. We're a different team. We have a different chemistry on our coaching staff. We have different leadership. We have a different belief. We have an outstanding kicking game. We have a different quarterback. Things are completely different for the better.
All right, Shane. I mean, he pretty much says it all there. And I think, obviously, that's why so many people had questions about LSU last year. But now, you know, seven games in here, this looks mm-hmm. like a completely different team.
Oh, without a doubt, man. They love that kicker, don't they?
Yeah, did you see he was getting photos with just hot students before the game? I mean, everybody's loving this guy.
Well, even the commentary, every time he came out on the kick, they were talking about, oh, man, he used to play in front of 2,500 people at the old school. And it was just nonstop. They were pumping this guy up. But every time he came out, he delivered, brother.
Now, on the flip side of this one, obviously, Mississippi State offense, like we've went on here at length, just looked terrible. Here's Joe Moorhead after this one. He faced many questions about the passing attack and just what in the hell is going on there. And he is basically at a loss for words here.
In the effort to get the pass game going, what were some of the things that you tried?
That we tried?
Yeah.
Well, we tried some quick game. I tried some screens. We tried to take some shots down the field because they were being aggressive in the run. So kind of all the things you need to do, you know, move the ball, screens, intermediate game, and then shots down the field. So tried just about everything.
Nick ran the ball effectively, but did you think about switching the Keaton to do something in the passing game?
No, I didn't.
Joe, what is the passing game looking like during the week when y'all are practicing? Is it looking a lot different than what you're seeing out here?
A lot different than what you saw today. I mean, we're we work on a 7-on-7, we work on a team. You know, we get a bunch of reps at it. You know, hard to simulate the speed of the game, and all the things that go into it. It's not just the throw. You know, it's the protection, it's the routes, it's the reads. It's the accuracy, it's catching the ball. You know, all those things go into it. We're not playing with the level of precision that we need to right now to be productive in the pass game.
You mentioned you didn't think about going to Keaton during the game. Will that conversation be entertained going forward?
At every position, we evaluate, you know, see who gives us the best opportunity to win. So we'll sit down tomorrow, look at the tape, and make decisions for Texas A&M moving forward.
All right, Shane, based on his just his comments there, do you think Joe Moorhead's a little over his head here at all?
I don't know, man. He almost like he's surprised. Yeah, I mean, even when they mentioned the backup, he was like quick to shoot it down, mm-hmm. and then act surprised that they would even bring it up. Your quarterback went 8 for 24 for 59 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 4 picks, and you're questioning why there wasn't an option of bringing in a backup, because this team needed a spark on offense. Hell, they've needed a spark on the offense the last few games other than Auburn, and I don't know, man. It's just like he's just I didn't see that one coming.
Now, what do you think of Devin White getting flagged for targeting and obviously getting ejected from the game, and now he's going to miss first half of Alabama? It seems like the whole damn state of Louisiana is up in arms over this.
And they should be, man. I've seen a lot of bad calls this weekend, but that one has to be the worst.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that Sime, I think this may be the suspension that shows it, but I understand the rule and why you kind of have to eject a guy. I guess that kind of makes sense, but I think it may be time to do away with the fact that they're suspended for the following half, because I'm not sure what in the hell is the point of that.
I could see why they did it, Mike. I mean, obviously, you don't want people just going crazy at the end of the game and just like all bets are off. Mm-hmm. I think they had a good reason why they put it in place. There needs to be some sort of repercussion, but you're not seeing that now, because this penalty is in effect. If you get hit with a targeting penalty in the second half, you're missing the first half of the following game, period. But there, I think maybe I don't know. Maybe a quarter. What do you do like when it's at the end of the game or end of the season? You know, they did this last year. Mm-hmm. How many people were just targeting at the end of their final game? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, if you do, I think if you do it at the end of the year, it goes to the next season even.
Well, I mean, if you're a senior, if you're not coming back, if that's the case, let's put some headhunters out there and ain't gonna get to play anymore. And just light them up. We didn't see that last year. So the reason I'm bringing that up is because it didn't happen last year. I don't think this carryover thing is as efficient as they had planned.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't understand it unless it's completely blatant. You know, maybe it's kind of like Will Muschamp we touched on, you know, weeks ago, yellow card, red card type deal. This was clearly not a red card type hit. But it's still being punished the same way.
For sure. Maybe this is something that they can bring up. They are trying to appeal this thing, right?
To my knowledge, they cannot. There's no appeals process for it.
No appeal process. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should be able to at least argue the case, look at the replays, have the guy that's over officiating, you know, maybe come out with a statement saying, hey, look, we did this. This is ABC. This is what he did. This is why we're going to stick with it or something. I think they should at least have an appeal case.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I guess they just don't want their refs looking bad. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. We've got 2 weeks till that game. So if something is going to happen, there's plenty of time. They won't have to rush it. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Shane, we got to talk about it. Sorry. But number one, Alabama coming into Neyland Stadium there, come away with a 58-21 win. You and I thought it would be a little bit closer than this, but what was your, you know, reaction to seeing the Alabama machine come into Neyland and just keep destroying?
Oh, Mike, it was kind of hard to watch that first half of the game. It just like, you know, when they came up, it seemed like before we even got settled, it was 28-0. I mean, I've watched a lot of Alabama games this year, but this one is the only one I've watched from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And I got to admit, this may be the best damn team that has ever played college football.
So you're jumping on the bandwagon too, huh?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, these guys can do everything, don't you think? I mean, name a team other than maybe like a like at Miami was pretty tough at 1 year. I'm just thinking like just total top to bottom dominance, and I've never seen anything like it before.
Well, Shane, I'm going to run you down their schedule here. I hate to be that guy because I don't necessarily think the schedule they've played should make them inferior. But you know, you're talking about Louisville, Arkansas State, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Lafayette, Arkansas, Missouri, and now Tennessee. I think the only, you know, outstanding team potentially there is A&M. You know, a couple of quality opponents. Missouri might be all right, but I think there's plenty of flaws in this team, particularly I think Tennessee just and no chance to exploit them. And in particular, you know, the line of scrimmage, running the ball, you know, Tennessee's they can't run on anybody. So I think them just running into a damn brick wall against Alabama, I kind of expected that. But now where this Alabama team could be the best is quarterback and receiver combination. That's something we kind of talked about at length all last week. And just Tua, his ability to read coverages. But I think the thing that really surprised me in this game is just how quick he releases the ball. And just, I think we already knew about him being able to hit a guy in stride. But it doesn't matter if guys were covered. He was still hitting them for big plays. And I do kind of tend to believe, kind of like you said, there's no defense for that outside of rushing the quarterback, and that's just something that Tennessee couldn't do anyway. So this is just a really bad matchup for Tennessee, but I'm not ready to quite go where you are saying this is the best team. I think until they've played at LSU, I don't think we can make a statement like that.
Maybe that's the problem. We're just we're not used to saying Alabama has such a great offense, such an efficient offense.
Right.
And it's just it's catching us all off guard. But I will tell you, if anybody did watch this game, there was some moments where it felt like Bama got a little exposed. they really had a hard time with Juwan Jennings. Big physical receiver, right over the middle. I mean, it was about as automatic as you can get for going against Bama. So I think he's got a lot to go back with and adjust, because some of these other teams that come in that also have big physical receivers, that's the first thing they're going to do is try to expose the front. So I think they learned something there. And there was a moment in this game when Chris came in, and I don't know if you remember, it was right before the second half or before the half. We went down and scored. I think it was up. I think we were 14 points there. And if I'm not mistaken, it may have been, what was it, 35-14?
I think it was 31-14, and that's I believe when Tennessee tried the onside kick, and had they gotten it and scored, they were getting the ball back to start the third quarter after halftime. So I think that's kind of what Pruitt was thinking. He was hoping to double up there. I mean, it could have been 31-28 in a hurry.
And that one moment where we just scored, we kicked it down there, and they were third down and nine, and we ended up, I was like, hey, if we get this, and the way our offense is kind of humming right now, we may be able to not win the game, but definitely make it competitive if we could score before half, because we were getting the ball. But something I forgot to tell Tua, because he ran for like 11 yards, and that started that final drive where they scored right before half, and that was just kind of like the nail in the dagger in the whatever that damn saying is, the knife in the chest, Mike.
The old boot to the heel there, Shane. But I mean, Tennessee fans, you could certainly see that happening. Maybe a glimmer of hope, but then, like you said, that quick strike Alabama offense score, and then they do it again in the third quarter and just fucking put this thing away. So, yeah, if there are opportunities there, you have to take them. You can't beat yourself. Tennessee, you know, they had a turnover here. Alabama had a turnover too. Obviously, the pick six by Kyle Phillips. That was a hell of a play there. But like you said, Tennessee brought in the backup quarterback, Keller Chris. He had I made fun of this on Twitter, but he had a quarterback rating of like 416 after his first drive. So, you know, if the backup quarterback's coming in and carving you up, that should tell you something. There's some issues there with Alabama's defensive backs. But like you said, Tennessee can't get the ball off consistently. Jarrett Garantano got hurt in this one. And we got to say this again, Tua got hurt. And now he was down for a while. He got up, walked off the field. He says he's fine. But again, Alabama's playing with fire here. That's another thing. If Tua, you know, this is not the same team with Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is the one that came in and threw the pick six.
Yeah.
And you got Tua with 24 touchdowns and no interceptions. I mean, I think he's just a generational player that does make this, like you said, we've never seen this offense from Alabama. And I think a lot of it has to do with him. A lot of it has to do with those receivers. But it's just a unique combo there that we've never seen, I don't think, since probably the Steve Spurrier days there at Florida.
Do we have a quarterback controversy here in Tennessee?
I don't think so, but
okay.
I mean,
the numbers look good, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, Garitano's numbers looked good last week, though. You know, so
yes, sure.
I don't know. It that is an interesting one there. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Shane. I don't know if it was. I think it was right after the game, or maybe going into halftime. But a Tennessee fan threw a cup of ice or something there at Nick Saban. What did you make of that?
I saw this when it first came out, man, and they were showing the guy get arrested. And what's funny is there's like 50 guys in orange, and then there's this one dude in an Alabama hat with dark shade sunglasses like the Unabomber sitting there. And I'm like, you know exactly who the rat is. I do not condone I don't like the idea of throwing anything on the field. I think that's stupid. I throwing a drink, throwing anything on the players. You're there to watch, or the coaches. You're there to watch them. They're your entertainment, mm-hmm. you know. So don't ruin it by doing something stupid like this and never get to watch a football game again. It's just it could have been uglier, but Saban really took it in stride.
Yeah. So let's get to that. Here's Nick Saban, of course. He's beaten damn Tennessee every year he's been here. He's won 12 in a row. That's the longest streak in this series. It's because he's undefeated in it. So here's Nick Saban just on the importance of that streak. And then he continues it up quickly with the damn guy throwing a cup of ice at his ass.
Well, it's special for all the people in Alabama who probably have a hard time going to sleep last night worrying about this game. And I think where my self-gratification comes from and knowing that we made all those people really happy and all those guys in that locker room over there are really happy because of all the hard work that they've done to try to get to this point and to see them sort of have a spirit about them that's really, really positive and they feel good about what they did today, you know, really makes me feel good. The ice doesn't bother me at all. So I'd rather have somebody upset when we're playing on the road than happy about their circumstance, because that means our circumstance wouldn't be very good.
All right, Shane, so old Saint Nick, he don't mind you throwing ice if his team's whipping your ass. What did you make of that comment?
Yeah, he don't care if it's ice, as long as they need a bucket of piss or something, you know? So. Oh, man, which... I'll tell you what, man, hats off this team. I'm just hoping that this is the most dominant Alabama team ever. So when they win the national championship, maybe Saban says, you know what, I'm going out now, you know?
Well, you can keep dreaming there, Shane. Okay, so on the flip side, Jeremy Pruitt was not so lighthearted after this one. This is the first time I've heard him call out any players for Tennessee. And apparently he did so starting at halftime. So here's the CBS sideline reporter, Jamie Erdenhall, I believe is her name. This mm-hmm. was her report at halftime of the game.
Jeremy Pruitt, interesting, coming out of the half. I said, Coach, what do you tell your guys in a game like this? He said, I made them one promise. We have a few guys that are playing the game the right way and doing all the right things. And I promise you that I will recruit 25 other guys that will play the right way so we don't have to play in another game like this. Wow. Pretty interesting lesson from Jeremy Pruitt at half.
All right, Shane, I was pretty surprised when I heard this. You know, it's kind of odd to hear secondhand, so you don't really want to question how exact these comments could be.
Yeah.
But then Pruitt was asked about it after the game, and he doubled down on it. So here's Jeremy Pruitt after Tennessee lost this game 58-21.
Going into it, we knew that we would have to play a perfect game to have a chance to beat them. But what I wanted to see is I wanted to see our guys compete and play hard and keep improving. You know, there's a lot of guys on our team that did. The unfortunate part is, you know, if you got some guys that don't, you know, it really don't it don't really show up during the game. So I think we learned a lot about our football team today. You know, there's some guys we had on our team that this game was way too big for. And I think everybody was able to see that and helps us. We'll move on with it, and we play a good football team next week. So we got to go back to work tomorrow and get ready for South Carolina.
All right, Shane. So what do you think? What do you think of your coach calling out his roster like this?
You know, I go back and forth on this one, and it does not bother me personally, because I saw it all over Twitter. There was like mixed emotions. Some people were like, these guys are doing the best they can. Well, maybe they're not. Maybe six or seven of them are, like Coach is saying, and that's why you feel like there's effort out there. Mm-hmm. You know, am I doubting Juwan Jennings? No. Juwan is giving everything he's got out there. Am I doubting some of these defenders, you know, like Nigel Warrior came, or Phillips with the – I mean, he was not going to be denied the end zone. So, what Coach is saying, he's saying that there are people on this team that are giving 110%. But there are people on this team that aren't. And they're like this game, they weren't expecting to win against Alabama. Now, if you ask any of the media or any of us if Tennessee had a shot to win this thing, we're going to say no. But the players have got to buy in and think they have that opportunity. Hell, they just came off a top 25 win against Auburn. And that's what he was so much upset. He's like, okay, we could go to Auburn and expect to win that game, but you can't expect to win this game against Alabama. And I think that's what it is some of these players just bought in and the game was too big for them.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly seems the message echoed there by Jeremy Pruitt. I think we should also note that Kyle Phillips kind of said the same things, and so did Nigel Warrior in the post game. So I think that adds more credibility, not that, you know, we've not known Jeremy Pruitt to be anything but straightforward. But I still, I don't know how I feel about the coach calling out his players publicly like this. I think this is something you kind of do behind the scenes, but maybe I think also at the same time, I think he's basically at his wit's end here, because we kind of saw a little bit of that after the Florida game, mm-hmm. but he kind of kept his composure. He kept his cool. And I don't know if he's ever experienced a loss quite like this. And, you know, it was probably humiliating against Nick Saban. And you know, he knew that everybody that he knew and grew up with was either a fan of Alabama or Tennessee, probably the vast majority of them, Alabama. So everybody he knows is watching, and he probably understands they're all, I don't know if they'd be laughing at him, but just probably feeling sorry for him. And Jeremy Pruitt is not a guy I feel like wants anyone to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I got that one right. I think you're right there. And it was just last year he was smoking a cigar in the locker room. So, you know, he's just 1 year removed from this or less, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is personal to him, and he wants his team to be like Alabama. He wants his team to be competing for national championships. And unfortunately, we're just not there right now. Because on the other side of that ball – or that locker room, smoking a cigar was Butch Jones, and he's the one that left all these holes in this team mm-hmm. that Pruitt's currently trying to have to fix.
Now, what'd you make of this, Shane? After the game, Kyle Phillips was just kind of asked about, you know, I can't think of the specific question he was asked, but he made it clear that, you know, he's going to step up his, not only his game, but his leadership in light of Jeremy Pruitt's comments. And he noted that it's his belief that Tennessee can win out. They will win out, and he's going to make that happen. What are your thoughts on Kyle Phillips making that pledge, and do you think it's at all possible?
Absolutely. I mean, the best motivating factors that you can have on your team are in that locker room with you. If you get some of those players to buy in, some of those captains, some of those older classmen to step up and say, hey, listen, we don't have too many more shots at this, and we're going to need some of these younger kids to buy in and buy in quick. They're setting a precedent for what's going to happen in the future, too. I mean, this is something that's going to snowball, and every year you're going to have – but you have to have the initial class buy in. And, you know, it's third Saturday in October, and it doesn't feel like maybe we have the whole team bought in, but it feels like we're getting there. And they're going to have to get there quick, because next week is very important.
Okay, Shane, let's jump to Oxford, where Auburn beat Ole Miss on the road 31-16. This was another game. This was kind of Ole Miss added a late score late to make it a little bit more respectable, but this was anything but a game. Auburn showed up to play this week, and they just kind of they ran all over Ole Miss. They suffocated them on offense. We were hearing reports that Gus Malzahn could be fired if he lost this game, but this one was basically never in doubt. What was your immediate reaction to this one?
All the ones I got wrong. This is the probably the only one I got right. Mm-hmm. And they had to man up. They had to come out, and they had to play. And I will tell you what, the running game has been a non-factor for Auburn for so long that they – I mean, it seemed like they were just damned determined to make sure that is it Whitlow? Is that how you say his name? Whitlow?
Whitlow, yeah. Booby Whitlow.
Yeah, just keep feeding him. And once they did, I mean, the kid almost had 200 yards rushing. So that's what Auburn has been missing is that running game and taking some of that pressure off Jarrett.
Yeah, and I think that's what he needed because, for the most part, Stidham still looked shaky. You know, his numbers weren't bad, 13 of 22 for 215 and a touchdown. But he still looked off to me. I don't know. He just maybe just doesn't fit the system or the receivers are not on the same page. I don't know. But like we said, it didn't really matter because Auburn was doing whatever they wanted. Now, that obviously could be a little bit more Ole Miss defense than Auburn offense, but it doesn't matter because a win's a win. Kind of, they get to cool the waters here a little bit in Auburn. They get to go into a bye week before they play A&M at home in 2 weeks. So this is one that the Tigers really needed, and that's something that kind of Gus Malzahn mentioned after the game. So here's old Malzahn on just, you know, how that all came together.
I mean, obviously we went through a storm, you know, last week with all the negativity and everything that goes with it. And with that, you know, either divides, which, you know, a lot of people, I think, root for that, or it brings you together. And we've got super young men in that locker room and with high character. And we got a bunch of really good coaches that, you know, are really close to their players. And we had really good practice, probably, you know, some of the most spirited practice we've had. And just that feeling that we're going to play good football today and start playing like we can. And I expect that we will, you know, the rest of the season.
You said you feel like sometimes that negativity, some people root for, people divide. Are you speaking about fans or what do you mean by who's rooting for?
No, we got great fans, okay? I'd say it's all others, to be honest with you. But that's part of it. That's part of it. And this is a deal that, you know, we need to – obviously we weren't – happy with the way we played, you know, there for a couple week stretch, and I think we're in a real good spot now moving forward.
All right, Shane, I thought this was a particularly interesting comment from the Auburn coach, just the fact that he sees that a lot of people, you know, outside the program can kind of tear you down, and a lot of times that works, but, you know, as he stated, it can kind of work the other way and bring everyone closer together, and that's what he believes has happened here. Is that kind of what you saw from the Tigers?
Yeah, there was a lot more fight in this team Saturday, and it bled onto the field, and you could tell that this game meant more than games past.
Yeah, and I mean, they're going to need that mentality if they're going to gun down the stretch, obviously. Like I said, that A&M game at Georgia, at Alabama to close out the SEC schedule. Based on this result, we've basically given them no chance to win any of those games. If they play like this, do you think they can win two of those games or at least one of them?
Dude, this team has enough talent to beat any of these teams on this schedule. I swear, I mean it. But it's going to take some perfect games in some of these situations, and it's going to take a lot more from Stidham. It's going to take a lot more from that offensive line. The defense looked good. I mean, they held the team in check, and especially up front. And if you could do that, if you could force a team to become one-dimensional and then you kind of control that side of the ball, then it goes back to the offense. And then if your offense is able to run and pass, then, yeah, man. I mean, they've got enough five stars on that team to make anybody pay for it.
Now, on the flip side, a little bit, you know, obviously a different story there from Matt Luke. He sounded kind of depressed after this one. He was just asked question after question about why his offense couldn't get rolling against this Auburn team. So here's Luke after this one.
You know, I think, I mean, they're good players. They're big and fast. And, you know, I thought they did a nice job. We did a good job of moving the football, and we didn't have the points to show for it. You can't kick field goals and, you know, have blocked field goals, not get it on fourth and one. Again, I just think just being able to win your one-on-ones down in the red zone, it does get a little bit tougher. We got to find a way to do that.
All right, Shane. So Matt Luke, he was hyping up this Auburn team all the week. We thought he was kind of making excuses for the upcoming loss potentially, but it sounds like he was kind of spot on. That's kind of what happened. I think the better team physically dominated this one.
This was his chance for a signature win, Mike. I mean, they are down, and I think he wished he played them last week when mm-hmm. Tennessee did, because that may have been the time to strike Auburn. And like you said, this team came out totally different. They just seemed like they were playing with the chip on their shoulder, and they never gave Ole Miss a shot. And I just think that was big for them, because the schedule, you know, as far as their schedule, they've got a bye week next week, right?
They do, yeah.
Okay, so they got the bye. They got South Carolina, A&M, Vandy, Mississippi State. I mean, they have potential to run the table if they would have got this game. Who knows? Ole Miss has enough weapons on that offense to stay in any of these games. And so I think that's kind of the mentality he had just going into the bye. Just would have loved to have had the victory here.
Yeah, and it's just tough, because if Ole Miss was not going to beat this Auburn team, when in the hell are they going to beat one, you know? And I just don't see it now from them.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Shane, let's jump to another game. It was kind of a snoozer here, but this was the SEC night game. Kentucky at home beats Vanderbilt 14-7. I fell asleep on three separate occasions watching this one. What was your reaction to watching?
Well, we got a little money on it, Mike, you know. It's kind of hard to come off and good. You talk about, and even when you do got money on it, this game was just – it was hard to watch. I mean, Terry had three freaking completions all game long. Three. There's four quarters in a game, Mike. So there was one whole quarter. He didn't have a completion. So Benny looked good. I mean, that's what we expected. We expected him to just grind it out and just milk this clock. But I tell you what, it was a tough game to watch, man.
Yeah, there's some weird stats in this one, like you referenced. Kentucky, 18 passing yards. Vanderbilt, 68 rushing yards. That kind of tells you everything you need to know about this one. These two combined for 11 for 26 on third down. I mean, neither offense could stay on the damn field in this one, and it was a damn snooze fest. It was what it was.
Yeah, but there was flashes, man. There was flashes of Benny doing really good, or flashes of Kyle Shermer I've seen a couple passes he made, and it was just like, damn, this guy's legit. But then it followed up by 10 other bad plays and a punt. And it just – people just talking about the win the entire game. I felt bad for everybody in the fans or in the stands there.
Yeah, so Benny Snell got 2 weeks rest. He needed it for this one. 32 carries in this game, Shane, for 169. That's good for 5.3 per carry. And that was good enough to do it. I mean, they put it on his shoulders at the end of the game. He mm-hmm. delivered a drive where I believe they only passed one time. I mean, this was the Benny Snell show to close it out. And then they had Josh Allen just kind of wrecking havoc, and he forced the fumble. So Kentucky's two best players sealed this one, kept this thing going. And, this was kind of like what I thought, Shane. I thought Kentucky, for whatever reason, I thought they'd be overlooking Vanderbilt. They're the more hyped team facing a Vanderbilt team that can't get out of its own way. For whatever reason, I kind of saw this one coming. And that's that's something that Mark Stoops mentioned in his postgame presser. But he also talked about basically his team nearly being a top 10 team now after this win. So, and, you know, here's Mark Stoops on the progress of his program and just, you know, the dangers that he saw coming off that long layoff.
Special resonance comes to pass?
It just obviously shows you're winning, and that means something to us, and being consistent. And again, good football teams find the ways to win when you're not at your best. And, you know, you guys watch a lot of football, and we had an opportunity, all of us, to sit back and watch other people last week, and you see the crazy things that go on. And I'm sure it's like that today. Obviously, I haven't had a chance to watch much, but I'm sure when I see scores later, it'll surprise me. And I don't know who or what, but I just would expect it. You see it every week.
You feel like after playing a game like this, the bye week helped to hurt you?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I was concerned coming off of it. It felt like a long 2 weeks, you know, and our team needed it, you know, certain ways. But other ways, I had to be very intentional about putting the team in a better position than I did a year ago, because we didn't play very good coming off the bye. And we played better and we won. But, you know, we had really good practices and we had high intensity practices and we're really moving. And, you know, I said that going into the game that I knew that the prep was good and you know, win or lose, that the guys were really doing the things necessary to put themselves in a position to win.
All right, Shane. So Mark Stoops, I don't want to say pressure, but I think they're starting to feel a little bit the weight of this SEC East race as it comes down the stretch here. What were your thoughts after hearing Mark Stoops there?
Yeah, they don't have a shot in hell winning the East if they play like they did Saturday.
Right.
I mean, I get Benny had a ton of yards, but he also had a ton of carries. There was a total one-dimensional team, and you're just sending up so many flags. It's like, okay, stop Benny, win the game. We've seen it two weeks in a row now, you know. They had the bye week, but mm-hmm. We saw it with Texas A&M, and now we're seeing it with Vanderbilt. And damn, Vanderbilt, like you said, they can't get out of their way. They had this thing. It was tied up 7-7. They had plenty of shots to win this game and failed to do so again.
Yeah, so kind of like you said, Kentucky's just way too one-dimensional right now. Lynn Bolden, he's their only guy that caught a ball in this game. He had 3 catches. So, you know, like when they play Georgia, they're just going to put DeAndre Baker on his ass. And then mm-hmm. they're going to put 10 in the box. I mean, Kentucky's going to get shut out unless Terry Wilson makes something happen here. So this can't really continue the way it's going. But, you know, Benny Snell was still, you know, he was still all smiles after this one. And, you know, after the game, we got to throw in these comments. Just Benny Snell on just Kentucky still having that edge after this bye week. So here's Benny right after this one.
I don't know if I feel like that. I feel like it's a competition at all times. Where we're at, we're getting success right now, but we still got the underdog mentality. We're still hungry, you know. We still got a lot more games to win, so the ranking is going to be what the ranking is. But we were always the low guys. Now we're trying to show people that we're the powerhouse now. So.
All right, Shane, I think that kind of says it all. I mean, he knew he put the game on my damn shoulders, and I'll deliver. He keeps doing it. But like we said, we're not sure that he can do that, you know, 6 consecutive times to close out the season here.
Mm-mm. No, he can't. It won't work. It's worked for some of these small, you know, some of these less dominating teams, but I'm telling you, the schedule's about to get a little dicey for old Kentucky, man.
Yeah, and final note on this one, Shane, Cash Daniel, the outstanding Kentucky linebacker, broke his hand in this game. He says he won't miss a damn play.
Of course he won't. He's a tough one, man. I like him. He'll be wrestling for long. Don't worry.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Arkansas, where a game where you picked Tulsa to win outright.
Oh, yeah.
Tulsa got shut out 23-0. Arkansas gets off the schneid there. Thoughts on Chad Morris and his program getting I guess you could call it a big win. They got a win.
Well, let's get this out here since we're talking about it. At first, I was going to go all – if you look last week, Monday, Tuesday, I was saying, man, I'm all in on Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know about the quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. Then you talked me out of it, and I said, you know what, Mike, you're right. Tulsa's going to win this damn game. And, boy, was I wrong, man. The Golden Hurricanes got shut out, brother.
Yeah, and I don't really know what to take away from this game because, you know, I want to give Arkansas credit, particularly that defense, but, God, Tulsa just was fucking pathetic. I mean, they did not look like a good team. They're 1-6 now. They looked it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Arkansas obviously needed this one. Losing this would have been god awful. Now they host Vanderbilt next week. Chance to have some real momentum going into that bye week. I think that's kind of my main positive coming out of this one. But we did want to throw in these comments just from Chad Morris on, you know, after his defense got abused 2 weeks in a row, basically. So they pitch a shutout, which is huge for them.
Oh, that was big. That was big for the Chief. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I watched this game from start to finish, because I did not. Mm-hmm. Once I realized that this was a bet gone wrong, I didn't drift back over there. So, but kudos to Arkansas. They came out. I mean, this is a game script, you know, get the lead, run the clock, shut them out on defense. I mean, that's what they did here.
All right, Shane, final SEC game. We'll touch on this one quickly. But another one, you picked Memphis to win outright.
Man, we are killing it today.
Missouri won 65-33. What was your takeaway from this ass beating?
Well, I did say it'd be a barn burner, Mike, you know? I just didn't think that Memphis would just stop scoring all of a sudden, you know. So now this game, man, I tell you what, the Tigers versus the Tigers. It was this is the game you'd see on Madden, you know, just yeah. Four wide, let's do it.
This was the Drew Lock we thought we were getting all year. He had 350 mm-hmm. yards on 4 touchdowns. We only had six incompletions. I mean, they just took care of business. This is kind of what I thought would happen, just because Memphis is not even that good of a team in their league. So going up against an SEC team that desperately needed a win here, any chance that Missouri kind of, you know, they're hosting Kentucky next week, a Kentucky team that's struggling on one side of the ball, at least in the passing game. Does this give Missouri confidence heading into that one?
Probably, yes, but the fact is, they gave that running back for Memphis almost, I think he had over 100 yards rushing. So, and this, that ain't no bendy snail. So, right. I think there is some confidence, though. But they're definitely going to have to work on that running game, mm-hmm. or at rushing defense.
Yeah, like you said, Missouri gave up 408 yards to Memphis. So, it might be kind of the cure here for Kentucky's woes.
Yeah.
Enough of the action there of what just happened in Week 8. Let's move on to our weekly game here, guessing the opening lines.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone that's not been tuning in, what this is Shane and I predict the opening lines for each SEC game, and then we reveal the actual opening line. And we'll start with Vanderbilt at Arkansas. What was your predicted line for this one, Shane?
This one, you know, because Arkansas looks so good and Vandy just hangs in so many games, I couldn't let them get away with too many points. So I've got Arkansas winning this thing by 4 points. Now, is this a legit home game or is this like out in Detroit somewhere?
No, Arkansas is done with the neutral site home games. They're back in Fayetteville for this one.
All right. Yeah. Give me Arkansas with four. Win by four. How do you say that? I'm terrible at it. So would I say -4?
-4.
-4? Okay.
And you'd say Vanderbilt +4.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Give me Arkansas -4. So Arkansas will win by 4 points.
That's what I had too as well. Arkansas -4. And this line debuted at Arkansas -21.5.
What?
Until they fix the typo. But it legitimately did open at that
number.
Let's
pause this for a second. I got to jump online.
The number is, in fact, Arkansas -2.5. So 2.5-point favorite there for Arkansas. So we were both 1.5 off there. But that feels right for this game, wouldn't you say, Shane?
Yeah, I do. I think this is going to come down to like a field goal or something.
Okay, Shane, let's go to another big one here. Kentucky at Missouri. What did you predict the line to be there?
Another tough one. It's like Kentucky, all of a sudden, I don't feel like has offense, and Missouri just looked like a juggernaut out there. So, but I bet against Kentucky for way too long, Mike. So I think Kentucky's going to be the favorite here by 4 points.
Ooh, I actually went the other way. I thought Missouri would be a 2-point favorite. I thought this would be basically even, but I was given the home field, obviously, to Missouri. A little bit surprised by this one, Shane. The opening line, Missouri is favored by a touchdown.
Oh.
Thoughts on Kentucky getting that disrespect there?
They're used to it, ain't they? Has there been an SEC game that they've been favored?
That Vanderbilt game, they were favored by 11.
Okay,
but,
so they
are. Outside of that, I think you may be right. I think maybe the South Carolina game, I can't quite remember, but outside of those two, they've been underdogs in all of them.
So why change now, Vegas, you know, because people are going to keep betting on it, I guess. But I don't know. It's hard to go against. I mean, Kentucky's almost top 10. I don't want to get caught up in the polls, but right. They've done some pretty, some pretty exciting stuff this year. And looking into just this one game, this was an ugly game, but in the games past, it looked pretty good. So I think that's what we're looking at here.
Any chance Kentucky uses this for further motivation?
Oh, without a doubt, man. He's already preaching it, I'm sure. Hey, we're the underdogs yet again.
All right, Shane, another one here in the SEC, Texas A&M at Mississippi State. What was your predicted line for that one?
This one I have got Texas A&M minus one. So I got them favored by a point.
Well, Shane, you're going to win this one because I said Texas A&M favored by 10. I thought they'd be getting a lot more respect. And it actually is the other way for some damn reason. Mississippi State is a 2.5-point favorite. What do you make of that?
I don't know, man. They found some offense for them out there in Vegas. But
can Mississippi State even score 2 points against Texas A&M?
I think they're counting on a safety from that defensive front, man. Oh, I don't know. Just home field advantage, I guess. I don't know. I don't seem right, but I thought this would be a close game. And to say 1 and 2, you know, I can't really argue that. But I think Texas A&M has the better ball club right now.
Yeah, without a doubt. And they'll have 2 weeks to prepare. They have the better quarterback. They have the better coach. They've mm-hmm. won 2 SEC games away from College Station.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guarantee this line is going to flip to A&M at some point. So I would grab the Aggies while you can.
What if they flip the quarterbacks? Put the younger guy in.
Yeah, that's a good. Well, I still think A&M would be a significant favorite. All right, Shane. Big game of the week: Florida versus Georgia in Jacksonville. So obviously this is a neutral site game.
Mm-hmm.
What was your predicted line for this one?
What is this, the world's largest cocktail party?
Yeah, world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
All right. I think this is going to be a great game. I mean, I really do. I think this is the game, one of the games I'm most looking forward to, just because I really think this is the game that decides the East, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think right now, at this moment, Georgia has the better talent. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that Vegas is going to give them the favorite at 6.5.
Hmm. Well, Shane, you were one off there because I predicted 7.5, and that's exactly what it is. Georgia's favored by 7.5. You know, going off that early line, which way would you lean with the points there?
I don't know, man. Probably Georgia. I just think, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they both have 2 weeks to prepare, so mm-hmm. there's no advantage to this game. It's at a neutral site, so I just think
and Florida's won 5 in a row, and Georgia's coming off a loss, so does that play a factor here?
Oh, absolutely. And if I'm leaning toward Georgia, you better bet on Florida right now, Mike. Have you seen my track record? But I just think Georgia needs to come out and get back in the spotlight, man. Just let the country know that this is a legit powerhouse team. This is they deserve to be in the playoffs. This Ohio State loss was big for them because they jumped them in the polls, and maybe that's the spark they need. Of course, Florida jumped them too. So mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I just think there's a lot riding on this ball game.
Yeah, that's a good point, Shane, because looking at Georgia's schedule, they do not have a marquee win. They've won at South Carolina, at Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they you're right. They kind of need this one outside of, you know, they play at Kentucky. That's going to be their only other chance to get a marquee win. And I don't, if they beat Kentucky, I don't know how much of a marquee win that'll be. So Georgia desperately needs this one. But I think if Florida's going to be an underdog by more than a touchdown, I think I'll lean towards the Gators.
Yeah. Oh, you'd lean toward the Gators?
With 7.5, yeah, oh, I think okay. So.
Okay, with the points, yeah, I got you, brother.
Okay, final game here, Shane. It actually does not have a line because Jarrett Garantano has not been officially declared whether he's healthy or not, so Vegas is holding back on a line here. But what would be your projected line for Tennessee at South Carolina?
If Garantano were coming, actually, I mean, either one of them, I don't think I'd change it by much.
Yeah, let's assume he's going to play because from all indications, he is going to play.
Right. I would lean more towards South Carolina getting the edge here, and I've got them by 6 points right now.
Ooh, that's exactly what I have. Same thing. I think, you know, obviously South Carolina's a struggling team. We can say the same about Tennessee. I think Tennessee more than struggling, I would say just inconsistent and lacking talent, but I think you could kind of say the same thing for South Carolina based on what we've seen this year. But with the home field, and, you know, we've mentioned this is a do-or-die game, this could be a really tight one. But at this point, I don't think you just know what Tennessee team's going to show up.
That's true, man. You really don't. And I'm hoping that they get their big boy pants on and go down there because this – that you talk about what line on the game, this one right here. Whoever wins this thing, I guarantee you he's going to a bowl. And whoever loses, I guarantee you they're not.
All right, Shane, so that's going to do it for the lines. But before we jump off here, we do have a mailbag question.
What?
Yeah, Shane, so this is a long one, so bear with me here. This is from an avid listener. She said she listens to the podcast every day. Her name is Grace Black. She goes by at Gracie Black on Twitter. And I hope you're sitting down, Shane. I'm going to read this whole damn thing.
Okay.
She says, hey, I honestly don't know where to send a message, but I listen to that SEC podcast every day as I'm getting ready for work, and it's the best SEC podcast out there. Thank you. And I've listened to a lot. I am born and raised in Knoxville, so I'm a Vol 100%. I knew Tennessee wasn't going to win, but I am pleased that we scored 21 points on Bama. That's a win in my book. I want to know y'all's thoughts on something. Do you think that Alabama has ruined college football? I say yes. It's everyone fighting for second place, and that's not fun to watch anymore. They've hit their peak. Where is there to go? No school would have 10-plus years of domination. Also, seeing the video of Butch getting a Gatorade bath and the picture of him smoking a cigar in the locker room made me boil just a little bit. Okay, a lot. How messed up is it that Butch destroyed Tennessee's football program, gave the university its worst season in history, and a year later, he's going to be getting a national championship ring. It's literally the worst thing ever. And, oh, yeah, okay. I don't want to read all that, but there is more. But she just called the Devin White the worst targeting call she's ever seen. And, again, she compliments us on the podcast, and she's can't wait to hear. So I thought we had to include this. She's a big fan, so thank you. That's Gracie Black. Thoughts on all that, Shane? Is Alabama's dominance, is that bad for college football, do you think?
Well, first off, I do appreciate the listen. And second off, I'm kind of agreeing with you. Just because – and I think because you and I are both Vol fans and not dog fans, I'll tell you that right now. But I even tell you the Georgia Bulldogs probably a little upset about Alabama as well. But if you take the fact that we're such a huge rival, a storied rivalry, and it's them that is dominant. Like if it were Ohio State or something like that or in a different conference, I don't think it would be as bad for college football. But the fact that they're in our league, we have to play them every freaking year, makes it 10 times worse. So I don't think it's ruined it, but I think it has changed it. And if Saban doesn't retire soon, then I may revisit this point. What do you think, man?
Well, I kind of see that angle from it because I am almost at the same point where watching these Alabama games, I mean, even going back to last year, Alabama was not tested until November, and we were basically about to reach that point this year because their next game's in November. Then they obviously had two challenges there with LSU and Mississippi State, and they lost to Auburn. And they got it. They obviously got into the national championship without winning their division. So I think there is some favoritism there. They do make it, it almost seems like a competitive disadvantage, but I don't know that they're necessarily doing anything that no one else can do. I just think it's Nick Saban, like you said. I think he's just such a great coach and a great builder and motivator, and obviously I think he's the best recruiter of all time. I think it is kind of, I don't want to say bad, but I think it's made the SEC less interesting because it's just pencil in Alabama to be the champion every damn year, even though I penciled in Georgia, which I could be right, but I'm going to be wrong. I don't know. I think the sport would not be as good if there's not a villain, if that makes sense. You know, you need everyone else to be, just kind of rise to the occasion to beat them. And here's the, I think, the best example of what Alabama being so damn good does for the rest of college football. And I think we've touched on this, but I think it's been a couple months. Remember when South Carolina beat Alabama?
Mm-hmm.
It was like eight years ago, whenever it was. They still talk about that damn game to this day.
Yeah.
Remember when Ole Miss beat Alabama back-to-back years? They talk about that all the damn time. Mm-hmm. You know, Auburn, the kick six, that's a play that I'll probably go to my deathbed. That'll be the most memorable game I think I've ever watched.
Yeah.
You know, there's these instances. You know, Ohio State beating Alabama in the first college football playoff. I think without Alabama's dominance, it takes away from all those moments. So
yeah,
it makes it more special with the highs and lows. But so I wouldn't necessarily say it's bad for football. I think it's particularly bad for the SEC because Nick Saban, while he's been so damn dominant, what he's done is run off basically every single SEC coach since he's been here.
Yeah.
And now the SEC has got like a new cycle. You got new coaches at Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, LSU, you know, the Mississippi schools, A&M. So they've all invested in better coaches. South Carolina, you could say the same. They've all invested in better coaches to capture what Nick Saban has. None of them will ever get where Nick Saban has taken Alabama now. But I think in their crazy pursuit, I think eventually it will tear down Alabama, or at least, you know, Nick Saban will retire. And keep this in mind, because I did hear this recently from my guy Dave Bartu, who goes by CFB Matrix on Twitter.
Yeah.
Prior to Nick Saban getting that Alabama, you know, I think people just assume once he retires, they're just going to keep on rolling or be at a similar pace. Their recruiting was at the level of where South Carolina is now. That's where Alabama wasn't recruiting before Saban. So once he goes, I'm not saying it's going to crumble to South Carolina's level, but it's never going to be that same thing. So they are going to take a dip once Saban goes, but I won't necessarily say it's bad for college football, because like I said, you need the Yankees. You need,
yeah,
you know, the Golden. I think it's just different sports, but you need those, that force that everyone's striving for, that everyone roots against, like we just saw Ohio State to a similar degree go down, and that the entire mm-hmm. country gets excited about it. So I think it's good for the sport in that way, but I do agree it's kind of been bad for the SEC because they're just killing everybody. I mean, it's not even competitive most of the time, but I think if we revisit this conversation, you know, in a couple months, if Alabama doesn't win the national championship, I would not be shocked, because like I said, they have not really faced anyone that can match up with them outside of A&M. And even A&M is in the first year of Jimbo Fisher. So I think it's a little too early to say that they're just the damn best team of all time. I think we need to let's see how they do in the SEC championship game in the playoff. I'm not sold that they're just going to run through everybody.
Okay. Damn, Mike. You ready for that one, weren't you?
Well, she put in a lot of time to write that, so I figured we'd put in some time to respond to it, you know?
I was about to tell you, come up for air, man. hey, real quick before we get off here, I did get an interesting question on not a question so much, but a message on Twitter from Eric Crawford at Ball Fan in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And he said in his opening lines for this week, And what I'd like to start doing every Sunday, remember, these lines come out, what, midday, Monday, usually?
No, Sunday.
Or, I'm sorry, Sunday. So they come out midday, Sunday. What I'd like to start putting it on our Reddit page, and you can find us at That SEC Podcast on Reddit, and we'll just start a thread. And I'm kind of curious what everybody else's predictions are, because his was pretty close to ours.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, anybody that is listening, obviously we appreciate you taking the time to listen. Also, I do appreciate the ones that went that extra step and left a review on iTunes. And we got three new ones, man. And so I'd like to read those if I can. This one is from ASC Dog. Love these guys. Gave us 5-star. Says, listening to this podcast is like sitting around with the brothers that I've never had. Have a couple beers while the ribs cook on the grill and talking honestly about the teams, even if they aren't your favorite. Love Tell the Truth Thursday especially. Wish the coaches would cut the BS. Keep on, brothers. So I appreciate that, Dog. Two more. I've got Lula Layla Leeske. She, cool name. She says, or he says, SEC is all I need. Best 5-star. Best SEC podcast out there. Michael Bratton knows what's up.
That's awesome. Shout out.
Oh, geez. And let's see. The last one here from James Longstreet, musician. Is that how you say that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm reading these, Mike. You're the one that's supposed to be reading these. Best ever SEC podcast. Finally, something other than Phyllis calling in the fine bomb. Funny, refreshing, accurate. This is how I like my football scoop. So I appreciate everybody taking the opportunity to rate and review, man. And that's all I got, brother.
All right, Shane, I'll catch you on the next one. I'll catch you, listeners, on Tuesday. Thanks again for everybody tuning in. We really appreciate it.
See you guys. Go Vols. Edit.